This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard, given on the 16th of November, 1955. The title of this lecture is New Understanding of Universes. This lecture is 61 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
Okay. I want to talk to you this evening about this is, by the way, November the 16th, 1955. I want to talk to you about the splitting of universes by separation processing. Although this is the usual and routine conference period, this material is sufficiently important to give you a lecture at this time. I have for a long time been looking for a process which would bring about a resumption of havingness on the part of a preclear with a minimum amount of processing. And I believe at that time that I found this process. It is of great importance to us that we take preclears who are in a fair state of dishabille and put them back to battery in a hurry. But why is it that we have to remedy this preclear's havingness continually? Why? Also, why do people have bad interpersonal relationships with people? Why do people act in a certain way toward certain people? People rather uniformly act in a certain way toward certain people. What are the exact mechanics of the contagion of aberration? Do they have mechanics, and can we undo them? Are these mechanics above and beyond the regular considerations that people make about other people? Are the mechanics of interpersonal relations totally dependent on associating some person with another person, as the Freudian school is likely to try to convince you? Is it true that an individual has to be processed for 500 hours? And the answer to these things I like to give you. Now let's start right out here with the entire concept of a camouflaged hole. Might better be called camouflaged vacuum for our purposes tonight. Now, what do we mean by this? We mean an apparent terminal that is not a terminal. And when we talk about a camouflaged vacuum, we are talking immediately and consistently about one thing. The person is pretending to be a terminal and pretends to put out on occasion, but actually does nothing but absorb energy. Now, what about this manifestation on the part of a body? Is it important to us as auditors? Believe me, it's important to us as auditors, for the excellent reason that a preclear can sit there and slurp up more bank than an auditor can very well mock up. This is particularly true of a psychotic preclear. Everything comes in on a psychotic. A psychotic is incapable of handing anything out. Get that? That's quite important. He's not capable of handing anything out. If you ask a psychotic to knowingly give you some item he is holding in his hand, he will normally bring it back to him again. Of course, normally you'd say if there's a compulsive inflow to this degree, there would also be an inversion, which is a compulsive outflow. Very probably this exists. I myself never had much experience with it. I found out that when a psychotic was actually asked to give up something, he was incapable of doing so. The entire problem in auditing resolves itself around good ARC with the preclear. What if the preclear is drinking up enough bank to throw into restimulation all sorts of mechanisms on the part of the auditor which cause the auditor to bring anger down on the head of the preclear? What if this preclear is so absorbent, so much a vacuum, that the auditor can hardly help himself at all except to react? Well, this evidently is occasionally the case. There are people walking around to whom people are mean, to whom people are angry, to whom people are hateful. And they just can't understand this, but everybody is hateful, mean, or angry to them. And they say there must be something wrong with them. There is. But the wrongness is with the body, not with the Thetan. Here we have a very curious manifestation of an individual being consistently treated by his fellow man in a particular way. That's interesting, isn't it? That would mean that the individual so treated had a vacuum in him which brought upon him out of other people's banks the anger or hate or disgust or repulsion which he experiences from these people. If we conceive of an individual who has a thirst for sweets, thirst for alcohol, some such thing, we can see immediately what we mean in terms of ordinary, routine, easy to recognize mess. About an inflow. This individual has to inflow. He has to inflow alcohol. He has to inflow candy. He has to inflow other things. Some girls have to inflow fur coats, you know, at any price. They have to inflow fur coat. Now, what do we find here? In the bank, we discover that the vicinity of the preclear is an electronic field, which is of the same order of mest, actually, as mest itself. There isn't such a thing as mental energy as opposed to physical energy. We can demonstrate this. If there were two different things, then you wouldn't find mental energy reacting on physical machinery. And we can tell at once that mental energy does react on physical machinery. And if this is the case, then there must be a relationship between the two. A further experiment carried out demonstrates that an individual can be given havingness to such an enormous extent that he can increase his weight according to any scale. In other words, an individual can have his havingness increased and increased and increased in terms of mocking up things and pushing them in on the body to a point where he will weigh more. And then by rejecting these same mock-ups, he can then decrease his weight. Now, I would like to know what peculiar kind of energy this is which can so definitely influence gravity and all other things. I'd like to know what this is. If it's not just plain, ordinary, routine, run-of-the-mill, buy it at the electric shop and from the electricity board energy. It is. It's of a higher wavelength, different characteristics. That's the only thing. But it is definitely associated with of the same order of thing as the stuff that comes through the electric light bulbs. Now, furthermore, we can take an electric shock machine, or you can take it, or somebody else can take it. And I know what they can do with it, too. Take this electric shock machine. I don't mean to be hard on anybody, but it's what you call shock neurosis is developed by this machine. This is quite interesting. We might as well use this as a technical term, shock neurosis. We don't care a damn about this, except that every day, every time we turn around in running Scientology, we're confronted with one of these shock neuroses on somebody's part. Somebody's been monkeying with his mind who shouldn't be in business. All right, somebody's been giving shock to somebody, and they've given shock to this person, and they either have now frightened the person so thoroughly of energy that the individual cannot handle his mental energy, or they have given the individual so much energy the individual has now picked up an enormous overpowering thirst for physical universe energy, electrical energy, so that the individual will come in and demand electric shocks. He's crazy. He goes on being crazy, but he thinks he has to have this type of energy. This is quite interesting, isn't it? That's shock neurosis. That's what it is. That's what we can call it. It is developed by man. If we had never had anything to do with shock neurosis under any circumstances, if it never walked across our doorstep, if it didn't concern us intimately, I would never say a word about it. But it does concern us intimately. It does concern cases intimately. Every time you turn around, you're picking up a preclear who has had electric shocks. They're evidently given out with soap coupons these days. Now, this is a shock neurosis. It's an electrical neurosis. And it reacts upon the preclear's banks very, very thoroughly. And to such a degree that it causes a compulsive inflow to a point where the individual has to have shock. We're processing a preclear right now in the HASI. There isn't any reason why we should be processing a psychiatric preclear, but we are doing so. We have been pled with until we finally did do this. We've done this so we can create a little ability in this person so they can live and not be a burden on the family. But we've gotten this preclear just so far, and they have developed a tremendous craving for electric shocks. So the preclear is now getting upset with his auditor for the excellent reason that the auditor is not going to give him any more electric shocks. How mad can you get? In other words, this is always interrupting our processing. Every time we turn around, we run into one of these things. Well, if an individual can develop a thirst for that kind of energy, the only point I wish to make here, I'm not condemning any particular bunch of mental mechanics, the only point I wish to make is that the individual can be made to create a hunger or a vacuum on the subject of physical universe electricity. We can do this. Now, when he first got his electric shock, he didn't want one. And then he finally gave up. They shot him with enough sodium pentothal, and they held him down thoroughly enough, and he finally gave up, and he quit. And he said, all right, go ahead and shock me. To hell with you. I'll take it. And from that moment there on, he had a thirst for shock. You understand, this is an important point. Because an individual who has been hated, who has had anger thrown at him consistently, continually, on and on and on, will develop a thirst for hate, a thirst for anger, and thereafter will be a hate-anger vacuum, or an apathy vacuum, or any other kind of an energy manifestation vacuum you can count or add up or find on the tone scale. You see this? I've only brought in electric shock here to demonstrate you can even take anything as crude as electric shock and create hunger with it. Now, certainly, we have thrown anger at somebody. He already considers anger's bad. We throw anger at him, anger, anger, and he finally gives up and he says, I don't care whether people get angry at me anymore or not. He is now an anger vacuum. And people will walk up to this individual, and out of their bank will be pulled anger. Into re-stimulation will go without any consideration or thought on their own part, anger facsimiles. And they will get angry with this person. And then they have to think up a reason. Man always thinks up a reason second. He gets the action first, and then he has a reason second. Got that? All right, so they have to be, now they're angry with this person. This person goes out and gets a job as a secretary. And we find the boss gets angry with her, and other office workers get angry. And people are mean to her. Why? One time or another in this person's past, this person said, it's all right for people to get angry at me. I can take it. You got it? And at that moment, you had an anger vacuum. And after that, that vacuum tries to remedy its havingness out of every bank that approaches it. Now let's take interpersonal relations. Let's find out that interpersonal relations have a tendency to go to pieces after a few years. Why? We get an interchange and a re-stimulation between two terminals. And one of these terminals, let us say, has some sort of a vacuum. Let's say they have a vacuum on sexual sensation. They must have been overcome at some time or another with sexual sensation to have a vacuum on the subject. How interesting. I give you in parascientology olfac 1. Its main purpose, by the way, was to create a hunger for sexual sensation. All right, so the individual now has to have sexual sensation. Okay? So somebody comes up next to this individual and they feel sexually re-stimulated. Or they feel a feeling of revulsion for this individual. You see what happens? Well, sexual energy, sexual sensation is just another kind of energy. Same as the stuff coming through that lamp there. No difference. All right. Let's take some other kind of consideration or energy. Let's take effort. This individual has been flogged and slogged and knocked around and been made to work to a point where he says, I will accept any effort that comes my way. I'll stand up to it somehow. He pulls effort out of other people and other people around them. Around this person, aren't working harder, they're getting their banks robbed of effort. They get heavy facsimiles in re-stimulation, and heavy facsimiles bring about such things as tiredness. So we get around this person, and we become tired. Just associating with this person, we become tired. All right, what is this manifestation? What is it? How grim can it get? And what can we do about it? It gives us the liability that every person who has, if having any difficulty in life, is probably having a mechanical contagion of aberration at work, in his own bank, which brings about and establishes the moods of other people in his vicinity toward him. How interesting. All this energy was at one time or another thought. This energy was thought at one time or another. But it is now on a total mechanical basis. And so we get mechanical contagion of aberration. We get mechanical breakdown of relationships. We take a husband and a wife, we sit them down quietly together, we say we're going to discuss this thing quietly, and all of a sudden the husband is screaming at the wife and the wife is in fits of grief. Oh, we say, well, we could run out a few engrams, we could remedy a few havings, we can adjust their interpersonal relations and all will be well. Yeah? How many hours of processing do you want to hand out to this pair? It'll have to be a lot. You'll have to do a lot of processing with both of them to really get them very smooth if they have been in a counter-stimulative basis. Now, maybe she has a sexual attraction. In other words, she's pulling sexual energy out of his bank. Maybe she's pulled it all out. If this has come to pass, you would have nothing left, perhaps, but revulsion. So the fact that she is sexually attracted to anything or anybody or is sexually attractive is enough to bring about a feeling of revulsion on his part. That's just one combination at work. He's been angry at her many times and she's finally said, all right, I can take your anger, I'll make it out somehow. And now she is actively pulling out of him further anger, but maybe she's gotten it down to a point where the anger is almost exhausted in the bank, too. And maybe it's lower harmonic apathy is the main thing that's turning up to fill that vacuum. Interesting. Now, on his part, he has long since accepted grief. Men don't cry. He can stand up without crying. Huh? He pulls out of her bank tears. And we're going to change their minds, are we? When we have all these terrifically powerful mechanisms of counter-havingness at work, we're going to change their minds about each other and they're going to live in peace and harmony ever afterwards. No, we're not. Not unless we take care of an entire remedy of havingness or do something about these energy vacuums created by misemotions in the human terminal. Do we see this clearly?
Yes.
We've all seen this to some degree. To be aware of the fact that it is so drastically and desperately mechanical is a rather frightening thing. It tells what it wants, that to stay well in the vicinity of man, he would at least, if you please, at least have to be able to build back or put together any kind of energy at all. He'd have to be able to remedy his own havingness easily and well, wouldn't he? Because every once in a while he's going to run into somebody that's going to insist that he be angry. How is he going to do this? Person's going to need anger. The individual has to be smart enough to throw some anger the other person's way. Why doesn't he mock it up? Why does he yell at them? Why does he put their getting angry for him on automatic? Why not just mock up some anger and throw it at them? The funny part of it is their bank goes, and the person who is mocking it up and throw it away, that says that's for the birds. He's unaffected by it. Similarly, any other kind of misemotion could be handled in this fashion. So a person is not left entirely without weapons and abilities in the face of such a mechanism. The mechanism is then nothing to be afraid of, since an individual can remedy the havingness of any other terminal in which he is in close proximity rather rapidly. It's a very funny thing if you just mock up some pure anger. I mean, mock it up, you know, not dramatize it, and throw it at somebody's bank who is absolutely insisting that, you know, vacuum-wise, they're not coming around and saying, please be angry at me, understand? It's their mock-up that is pulling anger. And he just suddenly throws up this mock-up, you know, a few square cubic yards of anger, you know? Just mocks it up and throws it in and it goes... Phew. Their bank settles out for a moment. He can talk to them and laugh at them. Here is the basic mechanism which makes an individual believe that he can go out of his own control. Here's the principal mechanism that brings about a condition of mind that an individual says, I cannot control myself. Here's self-defeat. The individual says, now look, I was going to talk calmly to these guys. I wasn't going to say anything rough. I was going to be nice to them. And I got in there and they just said about two words to me, and all of a sudden I was raving mad. And therefore I betrayed myself. And a girl has said, now, I don't want to have anything to do with this guy. It'd be an unfaithful thing. I have my own boyfriend and so forth, and I mustn't be unfaithful. And all of a sudden, boom, there she's in the wrong bed. Now that's self-defeatism, isn't it? And she says, therefore, I cannot control myself. I cannot control this mock-up. Look what happens to me. You see what happens? She said, therefore, I'm no good. Has got anything to do with her or the ages of accumulated vacuums. Here's a mechanical principle at work which he does not understand and which defeats her own abilities simply because she doesn't understand it. Actually, it'd be a very remarkable thing. Some young man is pulling sexual sensation into view simply by himself being a vacuum for it, you see. And it's quite interesting. All you'd have to do is mock up a couple of yards of sexual sensation, throw it his way. He'd go, and he'd say, it's nice having met you. You get the idea? In other words, we've discovered the mechanism where one doesn't have to betray oneself. If we consider the thate in the body, and most everyone has, then, you see, an individual's body actions and reactions were tagged up to his own personal performance, you see. And the body had nothing to do with it. Everybody supposed that he had to be in full control of his body. Well, if he is in full control of this body, let me point out something to you. He is also in control of these vacuums, sudden flows and resurgences of energy. And unless he is in control of these, he will always go on betraying himself in public. Now, it's quite interesting that an audience of embarrassed people can pull into being, on the part of a speaker, several kinds of energy. Several kinds. They may pull into beingness very great belligerence by this action, don't you see? You see how this could be. Now, an audience of overbearing people, they're just very, very overbearing, they have some kind of another mechanism going. This audience is itself quite belligerent, don't you see? Their belligerence, however, is counter-reactive. And in a group, they are throwing into existence a lot of anger. A speaker who has a vacuum for anger feels the audience is mad at him. They might not be mad originally. They might be just a little bit belligerent. And all of a sudden, it'll build up. And just the mere fact of his addressing them will drive them into mob action. How many kings have been in this spot back down the track, huh? Just the appearance, his appearance on a balcony to say, peace, please, has caused somebody to blow his head off. He said, I wasn't a good king then, as he flits away from the body. No. It had nothing to do with it. He should have said, I had a vacuum. That's the death knell, then, of many a man. Now, do you know there are people walking around who have a thirst for murder, a thirst for being murdered? They get killed. Interesting, isn't it? So that any kind of a human situation could be mocked up, one might say, on the basis of energy or transfers of havingness. Now, you could have somebody who had an overcharge and he outflowed something compulsively or obsessively. This is theoretical. Actually, it doesn't much work that way in this universe, since this is an inflow universe, and these overcharges are usually damped. An individual who is outflowing generally outflows for the period he's outflowing. Very seldom do people outflow by choice on misemotional bases. If left to their own devices, without this re-stimulation occurring, they will normally outflow rather decently, see? But they get these misemotional tricks thrown into the bank, and therefore, and they outflow on these misemotional bases. This is an interesting thing in human behavior. It is sufficiently interesting that in practice it should make us very alert as to the mechanical aspect of it, as entirely divorced from the basic considerations of a thetan. All right, now let's say this thetan feels that he ought to live a glamorous, easy, or romantic life. See? He feels this, you see? Now, he's picked up a body which has vacuums for drudgery. Vacuums for very unromantic roles and activities. And therefore, life will keep situating him at every hand in unromantic roles. Yet how miscast this fellow feels. But he feels there must be something wrong with him if he's so miscast in life. You follow me? There must be something wrong with him. There's nothing wrong with him. It's very mechanical. Now the mechanics of this situation are sufficiently important that they merit a great deal of study just as mechanics. No more, no less than that. They merit study as phenomena. If you wish to carry forward and study this phenomena, I invite you to look around people in your vicinity and mock up various misemotions and find out which way they fly, because they will fly in some direction toward some people. And it's quite interesting. You can also spot, it isn't that you are looking at ridges and you are doing all these strange phenomena. You probably yourself feel a little bit of allergy to looking at any other kind of energy than some kind of energy. But you can see any kind of energy you want to see. And you sometimes mock up some hate, for instance, in the vicinity of somebody, and it just goes in. It's an odd thing that it goes into certain body parts. Those will become the affected body parts of the individual as he proceeds along in life. They are the situated places for the vacuums. You can get good objective phenomena on this. You can actually put somebody on an e-meter who has one of these vacuums, and then you can go back entirely independent of the individual and mock up, let us say, hate. And what do you know? It'll flow in upon this man sufficient to kick the needle of the e-meter. Every time you mock it up, you kick the needle of the e-meter. But the funny part of it is such a rare commodity to this individual that you remedy having this with it so fast that you can only conduct your experiment for 2 or 3 minutes. After that, he becomes null, temporarily at least, on the subject of hate. You could mock up enough hate in his vicinity so he could walk out and somebody would say, "I hate you," and throw a lot of hate at him, and he'd laugh. This wouldn't have been his conduct before. His conduct would have been entirely different. His conduct would have been the trigger mechanisms that threw the various facsimiles into play and out of play that were associated with hate. What do you do in the presence of hate? You go into apathy, or you die, or you develop cancer. You do something, you know? You do something. It says so right here. It says, "Now I am supposed to." If you ever want to run a very fascinating process, non-therapeutic, but fascinating, is this process, "Now I am supposed to," and let the preclear finish it. You just have him walk around the room saying, "Now I am supposed to," and he finishes this off. "Now I am supposed to do this, and now I am supposed to do that." He just starts shooting the whole body to pieces, because the body is composed in its mechanical activities only of "now I'm supposed to's." Now, in view of the mechanical aspects of the "now I'm supposed to's," don't you see immediately that these things could be triggered by outside havingness? So you get an outside havingness flows in, you know, a vacuum in the individual pulls in an outside havingness. And he gets a counter trigger of "now I'm supposed to." This is behavior. This is all there is to behavior. Behavior is contained in various experiences and pictures and mock-ups of one kind or another. And it has to do mainly with vacuums And when certain emotions or energies come in and trigger these vacuums, the individual gets a whole string of now I'm supposed to's. And he does. Therefore, behavior could change on the part of an individual if everybody would get mad enough at him. There are people walking around who instinctively know this, that they could just get everybody mad enough at them, they'd feel better. I had a dog once. If you didn't punish him, he got sick. He'd do something that he was not supposed to. And his next supposed to, of course, was get punished. And if you didn't flow some anger at him, he'd get sick. Now, it's interesting. You had to remedy his happiness, didn't you? I have seen that dog mope around for 3 days, cringing, hiding under the stove, crawling under the couch, so nobody'd punish him. They knew that was the worst thing they could do to him. He'd gone out and killed a chicken, you know. This was conscience at work. An interestingly fragile thing, now that we can look at it out in the plain daylight. Conscience. Now, these energy absorption screens, which your occluded case tells you are occlusions, these black occlusions and occlusions of various kinds, are energy absorption screens, are these vacuums of one kind or another. There will be some misemotion or another which will answer up to every single patched-up screen they've got. It's fascinating. There is some misemotion will answer up to every one of those screens. Because these screens are there to get the last drop of energy that should be gotten. Now, how did the screen get created? Let's go over this again. The individual was given a thirst for the emotion by simply receiving so much of it and being so overwhelmed by it that he finally said it was thoroughly acceptable to him. And it stayed in that mechanical wise thereafter. Got it? A super disciplined individual would be one who would then require orders from there on out. Got the idea? Now, that's on a standpoint of considerations. But on a standpoint of terminals, isn't it very interesting that this individual will take the misemotion that usually goes along with military orders, would have a thirst for it, and if he didn't get it over a period of days, would become starved for that energy. And would then do something to get somebody in that frame of mind toward him. Got it? See how mechanical this is. It's very mechanical. It's like pouring water from one vessel into another. Red water and pink water and blue water and so forth. It's like pouring across. Only trouble is it gets consumed. Nobody's busy mocking it up these days. Creativeness is the missing factor in modern society. Nobody's creating anything. They're all doing it because they were made to do it. Nobody's taking the blame for it, the responsibility for it, or anything of the sort. They were all doing it because it was already there. Nobody's mocking it up. The second you add creativeness into this, the whole thing starts to subside and level out. As a matter of fact, anytime you add creativeness into any activity, you will level it out. If you wanted to run a person forever, all you'd have to do would be to carefully omit all reference to creativeness. Make it so that he always absorbed, he never created. He always used things which were already created. You'd invent a God who created everything and against whom it was blasphemy to create anything. You could invent such a God, you see, and then you'd have everybody taped. You could invent some kind of an ideological buffoonery which said that all things resulted from two pre-existing forces, neither of which were created. And that all forces leveled out into new ideas. This would be buffoonery to end all buffoonery. Then you'd keep everybody from creating. And if you did that, then everybody would be prone to these stimulus response actions. The moment you know you can create these things, the oddity is that the very fact that you were busy creating them to answer up to these various banks solves those banks. You understand? The individual is getting angry actions. He wants angry energy. You give him the first angry energy he's had for a long time. He's very good at mocking it up and giving him about 10 or 12 cubic yards all in a slurp. He'll stop this mechanism, this manifestation. This manifestation will be surfeited. And we will have then a condition of a null on this. Now, maybe the null won't last. Maybe there are other things. Let us look now at the whole business of valences. Let's look at valences again. Now, there is a basic law. There is a basic rule that we must not overlook in processing today. You want to remedy a condition. You want to treat a condition. You want to handle a condition or a consideration or a preconcept or any one of these things. You then get the terminal most closely associated to it and remedy havingness with that terminal. We got this? We do not have an individual then getting out of the universe of something ephemeral like not caring. See? We don't then try to run a havingness process on mock up some not caringness and pull it in, you know? You can do this because these things very often take energy forms. It's not absolutely impossible, you see. But to do a good job from an auditor's standpoint, you get the terminal most closely associated with the condition. By the way, the word condition is the harlot of any language. It associates itself to anything. Just that word, condition. What is the condition of condition? There is no condition of condition, there is condition. Conditions are really neither bad nor good. They always have to be qualified one way or the other. So we have this whole business of condition being without mass or form and being very closely akin to consideration or idea. Now, don't try to remedy havingness with considerations or ideas. If you do, you're making the preclear conceive a static. And if you're making a preclear conceive a static, you're making him sick most of the time that you're processing him. So we say, all right, mock up some don't careness. This is real wrong. Mock up some don't careness and pull it in on yourself. That process is not for the birds. It's for the psychologists. It'll upset somebody. Now, the right way of doing it would be to do it this way. What terminal do you or could you associate with not caringness? What being, person, or environment could you associate with not caringness? We ask the preclear this. He says, Mama, Papa, says this, says that. Maybe he says some present time personnel. We don't want it. Because we've only got an associative restimulator. Got it? We don't want the present time personnel. What terminal do you associate with not caringness? Now, evidently, this individual has a not caringness. There is some kind of energy that manifests it. The energy probably be very light. You could probably mock it up if you had to, but it isn't the valence that is hungry. It is simply the food the valence is going to eat. So in order to process it, as auditors, we have to have the valences that are hungry. We have to have the vacuums. We're not interested in the food that fills the vacuums. We're not interested in the hate, the anger, the sexual revulsion, the apathy, the effort, the grief, or any of these things. We're not interested in that food except in changing it or getting rid of it or leveling the fellow's bank out so he's no longer on this stimulus response remedy of havingness with his fellow man. What we're interested in is getting the vacuum itself, and that is the valence. The valence, the vacuum, same thing. There was a hungry universe around this person, which so thoroughly overcame this person that this person is now identified and interiorized into this hungry universe. And maybe this universe was hungry for tears, so this individual goes on making everybody around him cry if he possibly can. But it is the valence. It is the vacuum. And we have to get a separation between the individual and the valence to get a permanent cure of this condition. We separate the valences. We split the universes. And we have a process, oddly enough, which remedies havingness as fast as you strip it away, only faster. This is quite interesting. You could have a process then which would actually give a person havingness, even though you were taking mass away from him all the time. And the more mass you apparently took away from him, the more havingness he'd have. Now, isn't that a curiosity? You'd have to have one to get rid of such a sticky, collapsed terminal as the starved universe. There would be such things as the grief-starved universe, the anger-starved universe, the money-starved universe, any starved universe, the sexual-starved universe. You got it? And these universes themselves have at one time or another overcome the individual and left their vacuum within him or in his immediate vicinity. And it's those vacuums we want out of the road. Now, we can't ask an individual to process a vacuum, but we can ask them to process the terminal. We say, what person or environment do you most closely associate with not caring? And he says, my wife. Kibbit. You've probably got the associative re-stimulator. It's a present time condition. This condition's been with this individual for years before he ever met this wife, except he just didn't notice it so much. Now, we'll take the long way around if we take the present time personnel. So, we find out it was Aunt Bessie. And Aunt Bessie processes fast. Aunt Bessie was the don't care universe. What terminal does he most closely associate with not caring? Present time, he'll give you one. You say, that's fine. You acknowledge it. You say, that's fine. Is there another one? And he finally digs up Aunt Bessie. And you run the process on Aunt Bessie. Because Aunt Bessie was a vacuum. Must have been. Aunt Bessie has collapsed herself onto the preclear. Aunt Bessie, in all intents and purposes, is still there. Still starved for not caringness. Dramatizing it, starved for it, working with it at all times. But we want the terminal. We don't want the condition to process. We know we're going to remedy the condition. This we set out to do. So we get the most closely associated terminal to the condition and process it. Now that takes a little bit of thought and carefulness on the part of the auditor. It is a subjective, objective type of process that we care nothing for. We don't care whether it is subjective or objective or exactly how it's run. We just want a question answered. We ask if they can get some separateness between themselves and that terminal, and that is the totality of the process. Now, how do we choose the terminal? We know what condition. We know what condition we're after in the individual. We know by talking to this individual that people are very cool, not warm at all to this person. You got it? People are cool to this person. We want somebody who worried about it, who thought about it, but we ask only for what person do they associate most with coolness. You watch the mechanisms of this. It's very interesting because they turn upside down and go backwards and they do all sorts of things, but they will give you Uncle Oscar. What person, what terminal, what being do you most closely associate with coolness? Uncle Oscar. Okay, let's run separateness on Uncle Oscar. Can you get some separateness, you ask, between yourself and Uncle Oscar? And they go way back down the track. They go all over the time track and so forth. We're only interested in leaving the process in present time. We never park them on the back track. But they can spot present time locales. As long as they're spotting this, that's fine. They spot backtrack. The only proviso we say is get them back into present time by the same process. Ask them now and then, when was that? And they finally will tell you right now. Let them spot some more, and they will go back into the past again and come up toward the present. You check this by asking them when that separateness was. You get it? And they will finally start spotting around in present time and tell you separateness is between themselves and this person, or separateness is connected with this person. That's all you want. If you've picked the right universes, it normally will run too fast for you to get much chance to look it over. Because vacuums separate in a hurry. Every time you take a vacuum out, the havingness remedies faster than before. We take this vacuum terminal out of the preclear's life, and every piece of separateness conceived by the preclear then gives him more havingness. And we run separateness and get havingness. Why? We're taking the negative havingness terminal out of his life. And the normal flows of energy, which exist in the vicinity of the individual, therefore flow faster and are restored and work better. See that? This is real cute. There's a law that goes along with this, and a very important law it is. We separate out the not-have universes. Leave the have universes alone. Now, there's a shortcut to this whole process if you don't want to be so adroit. You merely ask the individual, what terminal or terminals do you most closely associate with not havingness? The individual says, what do you mean not havingness? Well, we mean just, people that just things were scarce. People that just couldn't have things. People who didn't have things. People who couldn't acquire things. You know, or people who, if they had anything, lost them. That's what we mean by a not havingness sort of person. Now, who do you associate with that sort of a condition? And he will tell you George and Bill and Mother and Oscar and all kinds of people, you see? Run them out. Can you get some separateness between the PC and number one? Some more separateness with the PC and number one. No more separateness. And we finally get number one completely separated. The PC will now have more havingness than before. Naturally. Now we take person number two. Now can we get some separateness with this person number two? And we flatten person number two, whoever it was, we don't care. Just flatten it as a person. Now we don't say, can you recall a moment of separateness between yourself and this individual? If you do, and I hear you saying this, I'll shoot you. I will zap you. I'll give you more energy than you want. Because you've lost for yourself with that command the one clue you must have. Is the PC in present time with regard to this person? The person will go back into the past. They will. You'll only know when they're in present time. And if your auditing command forces them into the past and tends to keep them there, you never will know when the person's flat. And they may run this for an awful lot longer than they have to. Now, some of these universes go out in a couple of minutes, and some of them go out in an hour. Some tough universe like Mama may go out in an hour. But Mama may also go out in 10 minutes. You got the idea? The bulk of the people with the preclears past, who have been not havingness people, go out in an awful hurry. Swish, 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 and your preclear's havingness is remedied. You've actually made them get rid of something. You've actually made them get rid of a person. You've actually made them chew up facsimiles and engrams and get rid of them. Just with a command, you didn't do anything else. You just ask them, can you get a separateness between yourself and this person? See? Can you get one? Can you conceive one? Can you establish one? Any way you want to put it, but not recall a moment of. It's not a recall process. We want him to get a moment of separateness between himself and Uncle George. And he does it. And obviously, he's looking at facsimiles and pictures. So what? He's looking at more facsimiles and pictures. So what? We know very well he's as-ising these things. So what? The odd part of it is they're all part of the vacuum pattern. If you've been smart enough to choose the not-have universes in the case, Now, if you choose all the have universes in the case, you just run the free clear right down to zero. You leave him with all the not have universes pulling his bank to pieces, and all of those who really furnished him some energy are gone. You put him in an awful condition, wouldn't you? So there's a wrong way to run it. Real wrong would be to run out the havingness universes. Those that furnished havingness for, those that had things, those that could conduct a decent life. What you want to get rid of are the weak universes, the weakest universes. And you'll get rid of, rather automatically, the non-creative universes out of his bank. And the second you've got those out, he becomes creative. And there's a second bonus. That's a bonus. Aside from just mechanically running out the vacuums, you also run out the considerations about creativeness. So you could ask him, what was the most non-creative universe that you knew? Most non-creative person you knew? And the person will tell you, it's this one. You ask him for another one, another one, another one. You get four or five. Very non-creative person. You could be very cruel about your choice of words, but it isn't very good to be so, by saying the most parasitic universes. Most non-creative, most parasitic, they're synonyms. And you've got them taped. Now you get what kind of a universe we want to separate out?
Yes.
All right, that's the kind of universe we want to separate out the case. The not-have universes are the drink universes. They're the universes that slurp. They're the universes that pull in the emotions. They're the universes that are vacuums. They're the universes that the individual himself has been towing around, pulling anger in on himself, you see. All right, now let's look it over and let's ask this question. Does an individual himself, then, ever exist as a vacuum? Now, somebody's going to ask that, I know. Does the individual himself ever exist as a vacuum? It's a funny thing, isn't it? It must have been a cross misunderstanding of ideas in the first place. Because when, like the devil did Tomlinson, we strip the fellow down to the last embers of his non-committal soul, we find out he doesn't himself have such vacuums. Isn't that interesting? So he must have picked them up someplace else. Remember, there are only problems in other people. A Thetan doesn't have problems. All problems he has are other people's problems. That's quite interesting, isn't it? He can't have any problems of his own. See, there must be other people's problems. If he says they are other people's and they're his own, they're still other people's problems, aren't they? He's saying they're other people's problems. But he's having to miscall it in order to have the problem, and it is somebody else's problem, isn't it? If he says they're his own and he still has these problems, they're still other people's, aren't they? If any way you want to play this on your Spanish guitar, you will still find that the only problems there are other people's problems. Similarly, there's nothing but other vacuums. See, there are other vacuums. There aren't any personal vacuums. It was quite cute. If you still think there are personal vacuums on the case, then the case is so thoroughly being some vacuum valence that the case has never announced it. So you would say, who are you most like? They say, oh, well, I'm most like my grandmother. You dear old soul. Poor thing died in the poorhouse. Everybody was mean to her. Seemed like everybody was angry with her all the time about everything. Poor grandmother. I can certainly understand her viewpoint. And this is the way you would get at that one. But as you start stripping them off, the others move out. This is like handling a series or succession of present time problems, each one of which moved further and further out from the individual and left him without problems he can do without. He can actually do without these vacuum universes. Now, an enormous door opens on such a process. An enormous door opens. It tells you at once that you could put into existence highly creative people and maybe for the first time get that terminal 2.5 where you could mock up a live mock-up. Because you'd get out of the way all the defeative mechanisms to mocking up that much energy that suddenly. You could get out of the way contagion of aberration. You could get out of the way all the mechanisms by which an individual has been mean to. You could get out of the way the interpersonal upsets on the part of the individual. At once, he could mock up and surfeit the appetites of other vacuums so as to null them, at least for the period that he's with them. You see? He'd be himself then, wouldn't he? He wouldn't be acting on a stimulus response mechanism. He would certainly be himself with other people. I think this might be valuable. This might be valuable. All right, once more, how do we process this thing? We process this thing by establishing down to the last thin hairline level one of SLP issue 5. We establish that. We really establish that. See? Real good, because we don't want this person to fly out of control. We're doing a process which is not quite supervisable. And then we list up these things, and instead of spotting spots all over the place, all we do is blow universes. So it's an alternate level two. But it wouldn't throw out such things as Waterloo Station and the rest of them. It wouldn't. It's an alternate step, and it belongs at level two. And it belongs really best between level one and level two. If you want to do a thorough job and mop up the case all over the place, you would simply interject what I've just told you as a thoroughgoing step between levels one and two and make your SLP issue 6 with the few other minor changes which it has. There's a level now, 1.5. Yes? There would also a level 1.1. This, too, is part of the same mechanism. All right. Where we have an individual who is acting incomprehensibly to himself, we have an individual who is subjected to oddities of havingness as a terminal. And these oddities of havingness, the fact that he pulls anger in on himself, that he pulls grief in on himself, that he pulls other things in on himself, strangely and mysteriously, have a tendency to overwhelm his concept of the situation. You see? This individual could also pull psychosis in on himself, you know? He could pull all sorts of oddities in on himself as a rather standard operation, you see? All right? We would then consider this individual to have utterly owned vacuums. Any one of these vacuums, at one time or another in his career, was a terminal, which was hungry. That terminal has overcome him so that he is identified to some degree with the terminal. In other words, he has a valence now. He has decided to put up with anger, meaning, I am decided now to put up with Bessie. I will put up with her anyway, you know, despite the fact she got mad all the time. He has now created a vacuum because she had some sort of an anger mechanism on it. You see what's happened here? And this and other little devices that you can figure out that would cause the collapses of these terminals, which are all very elementary, does bring him into possession with and identified with Bessie, and he is now possessed of her vacuum. Got it? Now, this vacuum operates to make people react toward him in peculiar ways. From his standpoint, but actually, it's not peculiar from the vacuum standpoint. It's simply a vacuum for anger, let us say. You get it? And the vacuum for anger is as a result of the universe of Bessie. We split the universe and we get the vacuum disappearing. Now, it's a not-have universe, so it's sucking his bank dry. It actually will be there years after Bessie is dead, sucking the guy's own bank dry. Quite interesting that they... facsimile, picture, and valence stays there long afterwards. We separate it out by finding the terminal itself. We do not run this on nothing. Always remember the bull in a bull ring is defeated by being made to charge nothing. He charges a cape behind which there's nothing. If we gave him a nice solid horse or a wall to put his horns against, he'd be a happy bull and would recover a great deal of his life. But we make him charge nothing, charge nothing, charge nothing, and he's pretty soon practically a dead boy. He wishes he was dead. You see? So making the preclear charge conditions or process terminal conditions is like making the bull charge the empty cape. We must find the terminal. And with the terminal, we then and thereafter, from that moment thereon, handle it so as to give him something to be separate from as a solid object. Now, we got this?
Yes.
And all there is to the process is to ask him to get some separateness between himself and that person. And we process the not have terminals he has known in his life. And that is the process. And I think you will find it works. Thank you.